calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, last night, the State of the Union address, we heard the President of the United States give some serious consideration to energy.
The energy crisis is real. It is worldwide. It is a clear and present danger to our nation. These are facts, and we simply must face them. What I have to say to you now about energy is simple and vitally important. Point one, I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment, this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never.
And the president proposed that legislation and got passed.
Moreover, I will soon submit legislation to Congress calling for the creation of this nation's first solar bank, which will help us achieve the crucial goal of 20% of our energy coming from solar power by the year 2000.
Oh, wait a second. Wait a second. David, this is the wrong president.
Yes.
You gave me the wrong president.
No, I'm sorry.
All right. Yeah. In fact, I should have closed your mic here. So here, Bush, a little wacky last night. Some very strange stuff. And there was one part that has me really scratching my head. Listen to this.
Second task we can take on together is to design and establish a volunteer civilian reserve corps.
What?
Such a corps would function much like our military reserve.
A military?
Would ease the burden on the armed forces by allowing us to hire civilians with critical skills to serve on missions abroad when America needs them. We give people across America who do not wear the uniform a chance to serve in the defining struggle of our time.
So you don't wear the uniform, but you too can become part of a paramilitary? Is that the deal? I mean, I'm starting to hear echoes here.
We never say never again, again. Cause here we are at war again. Up to our necks in war again with you.
Yes, an old German propaganda song.
We never say never fight wars again. Cause here we are at war again. It's just a thing that Churchill made us do.
Oh, Churchill just made Hitler do it, you know.
We thought to war we'd say goodbye. Cause war ain't fun and that's no lie. We like to live and we hate to die, but it's all up now, and that too is no lie. We'll never say never again, again, cause here we are at war again, up to our necks in war again, and we can't pull through.
That was back in 1943. I mean, that was a broadcast that the Germans were beaming into England as they were bombing them. But why are you playing Bush calling for a volunteer civilian reserve corps? By the way, if you type in quotes, volunteer civilian reserve corps into Google, you get no hits. Well, because it sure sounds to me like the SA. I mean, is that what the Sturmabteilung, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, the Storm Division, this was an entirely paramilitary organization, an entirely civilian organization that Hitler put together. They were called the Brown Shirts. There was a whole bunch of brown shirts that were left over after World War I, so they could get them really cheap. In fact, originally, this was Hitler's private, you know, self-protection group that was busting up beer hall things. Whenever anybody would speak badly of the Nazis, they'd go in and trash them. Ernst Röhm was a leader for a while, and then the Night of the Long Knives, finally, you know, the big conflict between the SA, the Brown Shirts, the civilian corps, the civilian volunteer reserve corps, and the professional military, the SS, which led to the Night of Long Knives, when they went in and they murdered the heads of the SA because these guys are getting too big for their britches. I mean, is that what this is all about? What was Bush talking about? This morning, where'd my sheet go? Okay. Doesn't matter. This morning, I talked with Senator Ron Wyden, Congresswoman Darlene Hooley, Congressman Brian Baird, Congressman Peter DeFazio, and Congressman Earl Blumenauer. Five elected officials from the Pacific Northwest. This was on my local show that I do on KPOJ, AM 620 KPOJ in Portland. I do a three-hour morning show that precedes this national show. And I talked with five different elected officials, four of them members of the House of Representatives, one of them a senator, and I asked every single one of them, what is the Volunteer Civilian Reserve Corps that Bush is proposing? And none of them had a clue. Which isn't to condemn any of these guys. It's to say, what is Bush up to that even Congress doesn't know that he's talking about? And why was this not in the newspaper this morning? Why was there not some kind of headline on this? Why was there no story? Why is nobody talking about this? I am totally... Is this the brown shirts coming back? By the way, somebody in the chat room says, you never said that was Jimmy Carter. Don't assume people know. The first clip of the president saying, yeah, it was, I think most people know that was Jimmy Carter. But anyhow, there's something strange going on here. There were some very weird moments in Bush's speech last night. Jim Webb, by the way, hit it out of the ballpark. Marvelous job that he did. But George Bush, he just couldn't resist, right? He starts out being gracious to Nancy Pelosi. And he does a great job of looking sincere, you know? He just does a great job. And then, what does he do? He reverts back to the vicious Republican speak of, let's rename the Democratic Party, which has held that name since it was given to it by Thomas Jefferson. Let's rename the Democratic Party as the Democrat Party. Even though in the text of his speech, what was typed on the teleprompter that he was reading and in the notes that were on the podium in front of him said Democrat Dick, this guy from the Republican Party, should we start calling them the Republican Party, drop the RE? Hey, Republicans, you know what, in England they're bartenders, in Rome they were tax collectors. I don't know. It's probably not even pejorative enough. But anyhow, here's Bush last night.
Some in his chamber.
Right, let's, we're going to have to turn this up. What happened here? Here we go.
Some in his chamber are new to the House and the Senate, and I congratulate the Democrat majority.
And he did that intentionally. It said Democratic in front of him. So he takes a swipe at them. And then we get to the core issue here, which is the fundamental difference in worldview between, frankly, conservatives and liberals. The liberal ideals upon which this country was founded and which have animated this country for most of its history. I mean, there's a good chunk of it from Reconstruction, from the 1870s through the beginning of the Republican Great Depression, where we really were seized tightly in the grip of the right. Of the cons, we busted out a little bit there during Teddy Roosevelt's time, the populist and progressive era. But by and large, the two great liberal times were the founding of this country, 1770 up until the Civil War, and then the great middle class that Franklin Roosevelt built. So anyhow, here's George Bush talking about how you make economies work.
A future of hope and opportunity begins with a growing economy, and that is what we have. We're now in the 41st month of uninterrupted job growth, a recovery that has created 7.2 million new jobs so far. Unemployment is low. Inflation is low.
I just have to interrupt this. First of all, we've created 7.2 million. Now, how many jobs have we lost at the same time? Number one. Number two, how many of those jobs came about as a result of hundreds of billions, perhaps as much as $1 trillion, being spent on a phony war that we relied into? How many of those jobs are jobs that are associated with death and destruction and blood? And how many of those jobs are part-time jobs? Part-time, low pay and no benefit jobs replacing full-time jobs. If you look at it that way, there has been no job growth under Bush, none whatsoever. Particularly if you strip out the government jobs created by government fiat. But nonetheless, he wants to claim benefit for it. And they keep rejiggering the way that they figure unemployment. Unemployment, underemployment now are at shocking levels, frankly. across the United States. When you look at what it used to be that you could actually earn a living with a job. Anyhow, Bush continues.
Wages are rising. This economy is on the move, and our job is to keep it that way, not with more government, but with more enterprise.
He says, not with more government. And at that point, all the Democrats stand up and applaud. And I'm going, what? What? See, because this is the old Ronald Reagan meme of all things government are bad, all things corporate are good. I don't want the government making my shoes, but I would like them to pay for my health care. Thank you very much. 16 minutes past the hour. And welcome back, 21 minutes past the hour, the place where real progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Well, actually, you know, we'd settle for clean elections, honest government, and a national health care system. How's that for a start? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman program. Jim Webb gave an absolutely brilliant response to George Bush's... You know, it's hard to even call it a State of the Union address because he didn't much talk about the State of the Union, and what he did say wasn't accurate. But nonetheless, I guess that's the official title of it, so we'll call it the State of the Union. Anyhow, Jim Webb talking about the economy and the middle class. And his vision, well, as he points out, he says it's almost like he's looking at a different country than George W. Bush is, or maybe this is an echo of John Edwards' Two Nations, Two Americas speech. I'm not sure which, but here he is, Jim Webb.
When one looks at the health of our economy, it's almost as if we're living in two different countries. Some say that things have never been better. The stock market is at an all-time high, and so are corporate profits. But these benefits are not being fairly shared. When I graduated from college, the average corporate CEO made 20 times what the average worker did. Today, it's nearly 400 times. In other words, it takes the average worker more than a year to make the money that his or her boss makes in one day.
More than a year. Now, that's on average. I mean, there are CEOs who are making billions. Well, billion. William McGuire, $1.78 billion. So it's going to, what's that, in 1 minute he makes what his average worker makes in a year? I don't know. It's something close to that. Anyhow, Jim Webb also talks about wages and salaries and what's happened with that.
Wages and salaries for our workers are at all-time lows as a percentage of national wealth, even though the productivity of American workers is the highest in the world. Medical costs have skyrocketed. College tuition rates are off the charts. Our manufacturing base is being dismantled and sent overseas. Good American jobs are being sent along with them.
And let me add to that, this from the Christian Science Monitor, actually. I believe it's today's paper. No, it's a few days ago. It's by Dimitri Iglitson and Stephen Hill. Currently, the top 10% of income earners in the U.S. own 70% of the wealth. And the wealthiest 5% of Americans own more than the bottom 95%, according to the Federal Reserve. The ratio of CEO pay to worker pay in the U.S. shot up from a mere 301-1 in 2003 to 431-1 in 2004. The average CEO now earns $11.8 million per year versus the paltry $27,460 for the average worker. As America tries to grapple with soaring health care costs and lack of universal coverage, United Health Group CEO William McGuire received an obscene $124.8 million in compensation in 2005. He's just one of the many grossly overcompensated kingpins of the U.S. economy. So Jim Webb continues along this vein.
In short, the middle class of this country, our historic backbone, and our best hope for a strong society in the future, is losing its place at the table. Our workers know this through painful experience. Our white-collar professionals are beginning to understand it as their jobs start disappearing also. And they expect, rightly, that in this age of globalization, their government has a duty to insist that their concerns be dealt with fairly in the international marketplace. In the early days of our republic, President Andrew Jackson established an important principle of American-style democracy. that we should measure the health of our society not at its apex, but at its base. Not with the numbers that come out of Wall Street, but with the living conditions that exist on Main Street. We must recapture that spirit today.
Amen. And it's definitely not what Bush is doing by saying, hey, we'll solve the health care problem by tax cuts. Right? Moving taxes around. In fact, Senator Ron Wyden this morning said that if we were simply to take all the money that's spent on health care in the United States, put it in a single pool, we would have enough money to give every doctor in America a full-time salary and have and they would only have to care for seven families. I mean, it was pretty startling. So it is Bush trying to create, first of all, an SA. What's the deal with that, number one? And number two, you know, the fate and future of the United States. Dwayne in Mill Valley, California. Hey, Dwayne, have just about a minute here before we got to take a break. What's up?
Tom, I was just wishing that the president had read Zinni's book, The Battle for Peace, where in it he calls for what we really need, the military needs, our nation builders, and that's what the American World Service Corps legislation addresses. It talks about half of the organizations that Zinni says we need more of these, more Red Cross, more Peace Corps, those kind of volunteers out serving the field so we can do
right, but these are not people who are working for the Bush administration.
No, they're not, and that's what the American World Service Corps legislation does at the website, www.worldservicecorps.us. We wish some of your listeners would go there because Boxer, Feinstein, and Woolsey are considering introducing...
So is this what Bush was talking about last night?
No, I don't think so. I think Bush was talking about a mercenary corps.
Yeah, that's sure what it sounded like to me. You know, it would take some of the load off our military. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm with you on the World Service Corps. It's a fine thing. But that's definitely not what George Bush was talking about. I think he's talking about not bringing back the brown shirts, but reinventing the brown shirts. But I don't know. 27 minutes past the hour. You get mad, you get strong, wipe your hair, shake it off in the sand. Yeah, in the sand. And welcome back. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Phil Oakes wrote a song way back when. I frankly don't know the year. I think it was in 66 or something like that. But it was wade into the river through the rippling shallow waters, steal across the thirsty border. Bracero, come bring your hungry bodies to the golden fields of plenty. And, you know, it continues on from there. George W. Bush suggesting a new Bracero program.
Yet even with all these steps, we cannot fully secure the border unless we take pressure off the border. And that requires a temporary worker program.
A temporary worker program. The Bracero program started in August of 1942, as I recall. Let's see if I can actually track that down. And it was ended, actually, I'll have to track. My computer just locked up. It's tracked down the actual date on this thing. I think it ended in 64. It started in 42, as I recall. And it was basically a slave labor program. I mean, it was, you know, bringing people in from Mexico to do mostly agricultural work in the United States. They had ID cards. They had to be vetted to a certain extent. But it was cheap labor for industry, in this case, the agriculture industry. And that's what Bush is talking about all over again. So here we've got... He wants the brown shirts. He wants cheap labor. He doesn't want to do anything about the health care program. Did you know that the insurance industry, along with Major League Baseball, are the only two industries that have exemptions from the Sherman Antitrust Act? I mean, all of this stuff, you add it all together, and we have this absolute mess in this country brought about by conservative thinking, a conservative worldview, and Bush advancing this agenda. I couldn't believe half the time when Democrats were standing up last night. Anyhow, Tom in Santa Rosa, California. You're live and on the air. Hey, Tom, what's up? Tom?
Yes, hello, hello.
Yes, sir.
I'll wake up in a second. I agree with what you said about that outfit that he wants to start up that'd be related to the brown shirts. Most everything that comes from them has a Nazi derivative.
It seems. It really seems. I mean, that's the only parallel that I can find of a paramilitary organization that's sponsored by the state, but are in fact civilians and thus not, you know, subject to the restrictions and whatnot that are placed on the military was the SA during the Nazi time. I just don't know what else he's talking about. It's absolutely spooky. Tom, thank you for the call. Lee in Vancouver, British Columbia. Hey, Lee.
Yeah, how you doing? One of the things that two things. First of all, Bush keeps talking about protecting Americans, but with his civilian reserve corps, which is essentially saying, you know, Americans without uniform could potentially be working for the military, makes those Americans who live and travel abroad targets.
Yeah, that's a good point. And he's already done that by saying that the press can be subpoenaed and like that, which makes every journalist traveling around the world a target.
During the 60s, the CIA tried to use students for that kind of stuff and so on and so forth. More importantly, though, the Civilian Reserve Corps is nothing but an excuse. He already has his mercenary force and things like Blackwater.
Yeah, this might be just a cheaper way of trying to do that, number one, or number two, a way of avoiding the draft.
It's a way of justifying Blackwater retroactively, like he's been doing.
Yeah. And I think he's also, it'll allow him to avoid there being a draft, because if he can have 50,000 people who are paid, who are part of the civilian reserve mercenary corps, then you don't have to have a draft. So we'll see. Thanks for the call. Jermaine in Woodbridge, New York, New Jersey. Hey, Jermaine.
Hi, Tom. I want another point to make. Besides this mercenary force he wants to add, he wants to raise the standing army to 92,000. Are we gearing for another world war, that we need so many military personnel?
I think, in a word, yes. Day by day, I become more and more convinced. And, in fact, nothing in his rhetoric last night diminished that. He never once mentioned diplomacy. Never once mentioned. I mean, some of the things that he didn't mention were quite noticeable. He didn't mention stem cell research. He didn't mention New Orleans, an American city where 1,500 people died. They're still finding bodies. I mean, he didn't even have the decency and dignity to mention New Orleans. Rather than making it a whack on him, I think the reason why, and Jermaine, thank you for the call, I think the main reason why he didn't mention New Orleans was because it is another example of the failure of conservative ideology. They didn't go into New Orleans because they thought if we just leave it to the free market, everything will be fine. And sometimes there is a job for government to do. Sometimes there really is. Ian in San Francisco, California. Hey, Ian.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the war in Iraq and Bush's policy. Prosecutor Fitzgerald has said that Libby threw sand in the eyes of investigators to obstruct their ability to get to the bottom of the outing of Valerie Plame.
Right.
Bush is throwing sand in the eyes of all of us.
Well, actually, with regard to Valerie Plame, he did that once.
And I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
And, of course, it was Karl Rove. And now Scooter Libby is saying, it was either Karl Rove or Dick Cheney or both of them. And Scooter Libby is now saying, I'm just taking the fall for Karl Rove. And nobody is saying, well, then let's prosecute Karl Rove because which has got me mystified. I mean, what? We're not prosecuting people for outing CIA agents? I thought that's what this was all about in the first place.
Yeah, well, this isn't over yet, but he's throwing sand in the eyes of all of us, Bush is, as it relates to his policy in Iraq. And what I want to suggest is that we need to remove the sand from our eyes and focus on his unstated central message, which, in my opinion, is if you want to end or even reduce our involvement in the war in Iraq before my term is up, then you must remove me and Dick Cheney from office.
Yeah,
that's the bottom line.
I absolutely agree.
And then that is his message, and I say, let's do it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you, Ian. Although I am concerned about the amount of time that process will take and how much damage he can do between now and then. And frankly, I think that's why one of the main reasons why he's going to start this war in Iran. I mean, when you go back, and Ian, thank you for the call. You go back and you listen to, for example, Cindy Sheehan's testimony before the John Conyers Commission, Bush talking to Mickey Herskowitz, his biographer, who is the ghostwriter for his autobiography, A Charge to Keep, which is in the bookstores now, the first ghostwriter. He told him why he was going to invade Iraq back in 1999.
Roosevelt is dead.
Whoops. Sorry about that. Wrong clip. Here's Cindy Sheehan.
As a matter of fact, in interviews in 1999 with respected journalist and longtime Bush family friend, Mickey Herskowitz, then Governor George Bush stated, "One of the keys to being seen as a great leader is to be seen as commander-in-chief. My father had all this political capital built up when he drove the Iraqis out of Kuwait, and he wasted it. If I have a chance to invade, if I had that much capital, I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to get everything passed that I want to get passed, and I'm going to have a successful presidency," end quote.
And you recall how he was bragging about all the political capital he had. Right. Steve in Orange County, California. Hey, Steve.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Glad to hear. You know, I was thinking of two different instances where there was a paramilitary force attached to government. One is Hamas and one is the militias in Iraq, both which have close ties to fundamental religious organizations. And I'm just wondering if the Bush administration is trying to increase the religious rights' ability to influence and enforce their views of the world onto others.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I just don't know, and I have not found a politician yet today who has any idea what Bush was talking about, and I'm not hearing about it in the press, which is totally spooky. Steve, thank you for the call. Here's the clip again from Bush's speech last night.
Second task we can take on together is to design and establish a volunteer civilian reserve corps. Such a corps would function much like our military reserve. Would ease the burden on the armed forces by allowing us to hire civilians with critical skills to serve on missions abroad when America needs them. We give people across America who do not wear the uniform a chance to serve in the defining struggle of our time.
The defining struggle of our time. This is totally strange. Louise in Reno, Nevada. Hey, Louise.
Hi. First-time caller. Really enjoy your show. Out here in Nevada, it's hard to get good talk radio. I wanted to bring up the point as far as Jim Webb was so good. I think he really touched the hearts of a lot of the middle-class Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Why
speech.
Don't we float out? I mean, he would make an excellent vice president.
Yeah.
That, I mean, Hillary keeps wanting to run. I believe that we should reelect Al Gore. And put Jeb Webb, he will balance out the South. He will balance out all the military people. You can't swift boat him.
Yeah, well, I think we need to learn a lot more about Jim Webb before I go that far. You know, he was a cabinet member in Reagan's administration, which doesn't disqualify him. I mean, I'm not, you know, knocking him. He gave an absolutely brilliant speech last night, though.
But we talk so much about message, the Democrats do, and the Republicans are all in the glitz and glitter. They're all into the book covers and not the substance. That we need a good, strong team of book covers to run against the Republican propaganda machine.
Yeah, and Jim Webb certainly did a good job with that. Yep. Thank you very much, Louise. Good to hear from you. It's 45 minutes past the hour. And let's see here. Yeah, there's the magic music. I was wondering where that was. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the radio support group of, by, and for we the people of the United States of America. We'll be back with more of your calls. And you know, can anybody, I mean, you Google this thing, Volunteer Civilian Reserve Corps, you get zero responses. What is Bush trying to create here, and why? We'll be right back.
It's coming through a hole in the air. From those nights in Tiananmen Square. And it's coming from the feel that it ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war. from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the U.S. It's coming through a crack in the wall.
Welcome back. 51 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Place for being progressive never felt so good. One more clip from George W. Bush, just a quickie.
First, we must balance the federal budget. We can do so without raising taxes.
Yeah. We've got this, $500 billion war going on, and we want to add to the military, and we want to have a civilian corps of volunteers, and we don't need to raise taxes. Right. Hutch in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Hutch.
Hey, Tom. How you doing? That was pretty quick.
Fine. What's up?
Hey, I just wanted to mention that, I read something from Mussolini saying that it was as far as being fascism, every man's duty to join the military, and they believed in perpetual war.
Yeah, perpetual war has been the basis of a lot of fascist regimes and a lot of frankly dictatorial regimes. Indeed, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Joe in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Joe. Joe.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're on the air.
You called me. I was listening to you on Sirius Satellite Radio. I wanted to tell you that I don't get a chance to listen to you but an hour a day.
And yeah, the second and third hours are played a little later in the day. But in any case, yeah.
Anyway, I wanted to talk about Bush's volunteer civilian corps. It sounds like he wants to privatize the military now.
Well, he's already done that to a large extent. I mean, you've got Halliburton doing what, the old mess hall KP stuff at a much higher price. You've got Blackwater providing a lot of security. The second largest army in Iraq, which is somewhere between 20 and 70,000 people, nobody knows for sure because it's classified, are private so-called contractors, end quote. I'm not talking about the people who are building buildings. And at enormous expense. I mean, it's just a huge expense. And I think this is something beyond that, but I just don't know. I just don't know. By the way, did anybody notice that every time, I used to make the joke about how one of the basic rules of Bush and Cheney testifying before the 9/11 Commission is, number one, they couldn't be put under oath, which is true, and number two, that whenever Bush spoke, they could not ask Cheney to drink water, which, is a joke. Last night, every time Cheney took a drink of water, Bush stopped talking and took a drink of water. I thought that was interesting. Steven in Alabama. Hey, Steven.
Hey, how's it going, Tom? It's the first time listening to you. Sound great, man.
Well, thank you.
Did you also notice, anybody else notice, when Bush was talking about the whole energy with the oil thing, that Mr. Halliburton back there was grinning the whole time?
Incredible. It was incredible. And he started grinning a few seconds before Bush started talking about it. And my wife, Louise, is sitting next to me, and she's going, look at that change in Cheney's face. What's he smiling about? And I said, he's reading the teleprompter over Bush's shoulder, and he knows what's coming. And then Bush gets into it, and you can see, we're going to fill up the reserve. What are we going to do? We're going to take $40 billion of taxpayer money and transfer it to the oil companies.
I mean, I thought this guy's smirk was going to reach around his whole head.
I know. It was incredible. Steven, thank you for the call. Brewer driving in Washington State. Hey, Brewer, what's up?
Morning, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine. What's up?
I have a theory on this private army that he's building.
Yeah,
I believe that he wants to legalize private armies so that the rich 1% of the country can protect themselves in the very near future, when there could be a very large problem with the economy.
That's interesting. I have been in countries. Well, when I worked down in Bogota, Colombia, it was very much like that. In fact, you would even see. I remember there was one. I was driving down one street, and there was this giant billboard, and it showed a picture of a cute little kid, in the backyard of a house. And in front of the cute little kid was a barbed wire fence with razor wire on top, and standing in front of that was a guy with a machine gun. And this was an advertisement for a neighborhood, right?
Yeah.
It's like, this neighborhood is safe. We supply the guy with the machine gun. It's true. Middle-class neighborhoods, upper-middle-class neighborhoods in Bogota have their own private paramilitaries.
Yeah. I fully believe that that's what he's been doing all along, and I think he's planned it for quite some time now.
Yeah,
and I think everything he's done with the economy has been leading up to this, with the war in Iraq, with the private army over in Iraq. I think it's just a training ground for them, so that when they come back over here, they have a job.
Yeah, no disagreement. No disagreement here at all, Brewer. Thanks for the call, Peter in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Peter.
Hi, Tom. I got you on speaker because I don't know how to get you back off speaker, but I hope that's okay.
It sounds fine. We've only got about 20, 30 seconds, though, before we have to wrap up this hour. What's on your mind?
Okay, my call is in regarding to yesterday's rise in oil prices and to follow up on the comments from the previous caller on that. But I think the only reason we would need, as indicated yesterday, to top off our emergency supply would be, you know, this is not doubling the strategic. This was topping off our emergency supply yesterday that caused the rise in oil prices. Why would a nation top off?
I think we'd do it because we're anticipating a war with Iran, and we're concerned that we might find our supplies of oil disrupted and the price of oil all around the world going up. This is basically buying futures. You know, this is buying not puts. This is buying calls. Bush is buying oil calls. So, you know, we'll see how it shakes out. But my guess is that this has something to do with his plans for war in Iran in late March, early April. And frankly, I think it's going to happen probably in the third week of March. But time will tell. We'll continue. I have some more clips from Jim Webb and from Bush. We'll continue our conversation with us right after the news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Oh, man, this is startling. This is absolutely startling. Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. GQ Magazine has an interview with Chuck Hagel. And it's apparently not in the stands yet. This stuff is starting to leak out. Chuck Hagel, finally, begrudgingly, the White House sent over a resolution for Congress. He's talking about 2002, the fall of 2002. Bush has gone to the UN after basically he was forced to by Colin Powell. He's gone to the UN to get Resolution 1440 requiring that the government of Iraq, that Saddam Hussein submit to the weapons inspectors. You've got the weapons inspectors in there, Hans Blix, Mohammed al-Baradei. They're looking around. They're not finding anything. Bush goes to Congress and says, give me the authority to threaten force. And obviously I can't threaten it if I can't use it. So give me the authority to use force. I intend to use it as a threat against Saddam Hussein to get him to give up his weapons of mass destruction. So that's kind of the backstory. So here, quote, Hagel. Finally, begrudgingly, the White House sent over a resolution for Congress to approve. Well, it was astounding. It said they could go anywhere in the region. GQ. It wasn't specific to Iraq. Hagel. Oh, no, it said the whole region. They could go into Greece or anywhere. Central Asia in the region, I suppose. Sure as hell wasn't clear what they meant by the whole Middle East. It was anything. It was literally anything. No boundaries, no restrictions. GQ. They expected Congress to let them start a war anywhere in the Middle East? Hagel, yes, yes, wide open. We had to rewrite it. Joe Biden, Dick Lugar, and I stripped the language that the White House had set up and put our language in it. And then when he was asked, do you regret having voted yes for that? He says, do I regret that vote? Yes, I do regret that vote. Holy cow. Chuck Hagel, former voting machine CEO and Republican member of the United States Senate from Nebraska. This has been apparently in the books for a long, long time. Bush used the word Iraq, this is from Think Progress, 37 times in the State of the Union last night, more than in any other year. He said the word freedom just three times, fewer than any other year. Yeah. Oh, my. See, I wanted to really bring this back around to, and then we'll get back to your calls and thoughts on this and your take on it as well, but there is a fundamental difference in worldviews at work here. And it was played out brilliantly last night between the speech by Bush and the speech by Webb. And in the reaction to the speech by Bush, the traditional liberal worldview, Leon Baradatti, he wrote a landmark book. This is, it's a textbook. It's used as a college textbook. It's like $80, you know, because you know how college textbooks are. But it's probably the best book on politics that's ever been written. It's called Political Ideologies, Their Origins and Impact. And he lays out the liberal philosophy in this book. These are the things that are characteristic of liberal governments. And using the word in the way that we use it here in the United States, not the way that Europeans use it to mean what we use, what we mean conservative here. Number one, human rights. The idea that all humans have rights. Even when they've committed crimes, they have rights. Number two, rationalism. That is the belief in natural law. Actually, let me give you the contrasting side of this. The liberal worldview is that humans have rights. The conservative worldview is that only the ruling class has rights. And that if you don't go along with things the way we want you to go along with it, you don't have any rights either. We'll throw your ass in Guantanamo Bay for 5 years. We'll break you like we did Jose Padilla, torture you to the point where you think your own lawyer is part of it. The liberal worldview believes in rationalism and natural law. In other words, you check out science. If science says it's so, hey, maybe it's so. You make policy based on facts. The conservative worldview, increasingly, well, actually, Russell Kirk, back in 1953, his book, The Conservative Mind, he outlines the six items of the six basic tenets of modern conservatism, which are to this day held up as the Bible by the modern conservative movement. And number one is a divine intent, rules society. So liberals would say, we're going to make laws. Now, it doesn't say that you can't have faith or religion. In fact, most liberals are all in favor of faith and religion, just not running the government. Thank you very much. Public policy should be made based on rationalism. That's the liberal worldview. Public policy should be made based on an interpretation of what a god or gods want, depending on the nation, depending on the religion. That's the conservative worldview. The liberal worldview, equalitarianism, is the word that Leon Baradat uses to describe it, and that is, you know, the social scientists, political scientists use to describe it. It's a fancy way of saying all people are created equal. Whereas you go back to Russell Kirk in his 1953 book, The Conservative Mind, and he says, civilized society requires orders and classes. In other words, all people are not equal. You have the rulers and you have the ruled. Now, in a conservative monarchy, you have the ruled is by virtue of DNA, by virtue of lineage. In a conservative democracy or a conservative republic, the rulers are those who are the smartest, right? It's a meritocracy. But nonetheless, you have the rulers and the ruled. Whereas the liberals, like Washington and Jefferson and Madison, the guys who founded this country all the way up to today, they would say, no, I'm sorry, the leaders are not the rulers, they are the servants. They are the representatives of the people, not the rulers of the people. But in the conservative worldview, they're the rulers. And so you get it. I mean, Bush really and truly does reflect this modern conservative worldview. And so, by modern, I mean, you know, the last, what, 2,000 years. Personal liberty is the fourth point that Baradat talks about in Political Ideologies as the fourth mark of a liberal nation or a liberal political worldview. Personal liberty. Now, this is only possible if you assume that the basic nature of humans is good. Then the purpose of government is not to restrain people. The purpose of government is to facilitate the public good. And people are free. Now, in the conservative worldview, You go back to Russell Kirk, 1953, The Conservative Mind, which, as I said, is still the Bible of the conservative movement. His item number 5, man must control his will and his appetite, knowing that he is governed more by emotion than by reason. In other words, people are essentially evil, or at least out of control. And so the goal of government is to control them. And you just, I mean, this was threaded throughout Bush's speech last night. We don't want more government, right? And finally, internationalism. Liberals believe that we can work together with other nations. And again, this is only possible if you assume that the essential nature of humans is good. In the conservative worldview, you go back to Russell Kirk, his item number 6, society must alter slowly, and property and freedom are inseparably interconnected. In other words, the more stuff you have, the more free you are in the conservative worldview. And this is why Bush does not want to go into a healthcare program where there's any government part of it. He says, well, you know, we're gonna raise the taxes on, you know, over $15,000 a year health insurance programs, which almost nobody has or very few people have, and give tax breaks to really poor people so they can buy health insurance. Yeah, right. Somebody who's eating dog food and not taking their pharmaceuticals because they can't afford it, and you're going to give them a tax break. On what? On taxes they're not paying? Because, I mean, they're paying FICA taxes, they're paying Social Security taxes, they're paying sales taxes, they're paying property taxes, they're paying, you know, they're paying a whole variety of taxes. But, excuse me, but they're, by and large, at that point in income, they're not paying income taxes. So what are you going to do? Well, let's give them a tax break. That'll solve the problems. Somehow, I don't think so. I just don't think so. 16 minutes past the hour. I'll be back with your calls right after. Pardon me, I'm coughing here. I'll be back with your calls in just a second. Tom Hartman program. Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour on listener-supported radio, the Tom Hartman program, supported by you, our listeners, listening for local sponsors who you can catch doing something right, like, hey, you're supporting Progressive Talk Radio. I'm going to buy your products or at least tell my friends about them. So listen carefully for your local sponsors and, of course, your national sponsors like Sacred Grounds Coffee, saving the planet one cup at a time, all fair trade, all organic, sacredgroundscoffee.com. Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com, the Organic Wine Company, ecowine.com, and Purina One Natural Blends at 866-380-MEOW, M-E-O-W, 866-380-MEOW. Our phone number, 1-866-440-THOM. If you want to drop into our live chat room, go to tomhartman.com. However you spell it, we'll get you there, and click live chat. It'll get you right in there. And Lori in San Francisco, California on the line. Hey, Lori, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm fine. Actually, I'm coughing a little bit.
No, I can hear that.
I'm sorry. Something just creeped up and grabbed hold of me. I've been on the air for, this is the fourth hour today, and all of a sudden it just whacked me.
You know what it is? You're gagging over Bush.
It may well be. It may well be. I think it's that last night I had 3 hours sleep, the night before I had 5 hours sleep, and it's starting to catch up with me. So I'm going to sleep on the plane to Washington this afternoon.
Well,
the reason
I'm calling is I am absolutely baffled by something, and maybe you could shed a little light here. We impeached a guy for unzipping his pants.
Well, we impeached him for lying about unzipping his pants, but close enough.
Yeah, which strikes me still as a little odd, but okay. I don't understand why we haven't impeached Bush, and I'm wondering, is that because the Democrats have had no power up until now?
Yes.
Is that the simple reason?
That's the simple reason. That's the 100% simple reason is because a bill of impeachment – has to, first of all, it has to follow an investigation. You have to have an investigation that determines that there was an impeachable crime.
Okay.
And so first you have to convene a committee and call witnesses and put them under oath, and somebody has to raise their hand and swear under oath that they know, and here's the evidence, here's the paperwork to go along with it, that Bush broke the FISA law, for example, or that he lied about what he knew about weapons of mass destruction, or that he intended to go into Iraq even before 9/11, or that he lied about not knowing that 9/11 was going to happen, or where or how or whatever, whatever it may be, right? First you have to have that. And
okay.
then you have to have somebody submit a bill of impeachment to the House of Representatives, and it has to be accepted by the Speaker of the House. The Republicans prevented either one of those two things from ever happening, did not even allow it to happen. The Democrats, it's interesting, I talked with Congressman Peter DeFazio this morning, who's a regular on my local program that I do before this national show, and represents actually a district in Eugene that carries this national program, KOPT. And I mentioned impeachment to him, I don't know, 2-3 months ago, a couple times, and he'd always get really upset. We've got other things to do. It's important. We got to move on. And this morning I said, I got to tell you, Congressman, I'm getting slammed with calls from people who are like, we've got to stop this guy before he can do any more harm. And the only way that we can think of to stop him is to impeach him.
Absolutely.
And, are you still going to, blow back at me when I tell you that I think that that's what should happen? And he essentially said, I can't quote him verbatim, but he essentially said, no, we need to have some investigations. We need to begin the investigation process, which I take to be, I know when Bernie says it, it's code for, to say you're going to impeach somebody before you've done the investigation is the same thing as a cop or a prosecutor saying, even before the person has been arrested, that they're going to get life in jail.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
because
the chances are good then.
Oh, I think the chances are very good. It's just a matter of the investigation. And it's just we have to encourage our members of Congress to conduct the investigations, because there is no doubt in my mind that when they conduct those investigations, they're going to find high crimes and misdemeanors that make lying about unzipping your pants to be, absolutely nothing by comparison.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot, Laurie, and thanks for injecting some sanity into the day. Ken in Seattle. Hey, Ken.
Morning, Tom. How you doing?
Great. What's up?
Hey, number one, I want to say thank you very much for all your insightful information that I get from you. I have to walk around with a pen and paper every time I listen to your show.
I think that's a good sign.
Yeah, to write down all the websites and everything, because everything is just like you just want to read more.
Yeah.
Anyway,
by the way, we have over at TomHartmann.com, if you go over to our message boards every day, Sue puts on there every link, every story that I talk about, all the links are there. There's conversations about these things. There are audio clips, transcripts of a lot of our shows. There's a lot of resources there. So just a heads up.
Good. So, hey, I did want to talk a little bit about Bush's speech yesterday, the parts that I did catch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ex-military, and I used to work in operational plans.
Mm-hmm.
And he put the troops in danger, the reinforcements, by telling the enemy how many troops are going to be going where and what parts of the country.
Well, that's an interesting point. And that's exactly what he was accusing the Democrats of trying to do back when they were saying, what are you going to do? What are you going to do with this war authority if we give it to you?
How dare you ask me? Yeah,
that's
added to another reason to try him for crimes of high misdemeanors.
Yep, amen. Ken, thank you very much. Good to hear from you. Amazing. Good point. I hadn't considered. I'm telling you, I am so blessed with this program. I have the smartest listeners in the country. 27 minutes past the hour. Back with your calls after this break.
No one knows what it's like to feel these feelings like I do, and I blame you.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartmann here with you for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. By the way, as soon as I get off the air here this afternoon, I'm going to be hopping on a plane to Washington, D.C. tomorrow morning. I will be doing this program live from a radio row at the Mayflower Hotel at the Families USA Conference, and we'll have some guests on from that conference, and on Friday as well, tomorrow and Friday. And tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at the Mayflower Hotel, open to the public, book signing and a rant on We the People, on Screwed, the Undeclared War Against the Middle Class, and what we can do about it. So thought you'd want to know. I received an email here from somebody who says Charlie Rangel introduced a piece of legislation about a civilian, volunteer civilian corps. I wonder if that's the same thing. This is so weird. You know, what is going on? What is George Bush up to here? I've just reached the point where anytime I hear this kind of language, I start getting really nervous.
Second task we can take on together is to design and establish a volunteer civilian reserve corps. Such a corps would function much like our military reserve, would ease the burden on the armed forces by allowing us to hire civilians with critical skills to serve on missions abroad when America needs them. We give people across America who do not wear the uniform a chance to serve in the defining struggle of our time.
Yeah. What? What? Are we talking about creating the brown shirts, a civilian paramilitary force? It just doesn't seem, frankly, like a good idea. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number, Stuart in Seattle. Hey, Stuart.
Yes, you often talk about the importance of framing. That is, that the most important part of what we say is often how we frame the question or issue, or often how we phrase it. I caught you doing two things the last hour that Karl Rove would have wanted us to do.
Okay.
One was you talked about a need for tax increases without saying tax increases for whom. So they always talk about tax increases, tax decreases, without saying who they want to put those taxes on.
Sure.
And
well, the fact of the matter is that what they are doing, is they're increasing taxes on the middle class and they're cutting them for the very wealthy.
That's what they always do.
Bottom line.
What they always do, but then
never
they talk
they
about the need for a tax decrease or how we don't want tax increases.
Right.
But you do want tax increases for the big corporations and for the ultra wealthy.
Yep.
The other thing was you referred to Blackwater as a security contractor. That's exactly how they want us to phrase it, either a security contractor or a private contractor. They're mercenaries, just like the brown shirts you're talking
about.
Well,
they don't call themselves mercenaries, though.
They may not call themselves such, but...
And frankly, I'm not sure that that's an accurate description of what they do. Because mercenaries are actually an army. I mean, they go out and they carry weapons and they repel other armies. And the Blackwater people, at least my understanding of it, and I don't pretend to be an expert on Blackwater or any of these independent companies, but my understanding is that mostly what they're doing is defensive rather than offensive. We hired mercenaries in the Revolutionary War. We hired people came over from Germany, the Hessians, and paid for them with money that we borrowed from the French to fight against the British.
Yeah.
They were going out with guns fighting against the British. My understanding is that what the Blackwater type folks, and it's not just Blackwater, there's several companies that are doing this,
yeah,
that what they're doing is they're traveling around with convoys defensively, protecting people. And, you know, you can argue that that's something that should be done by the military or not. I mean, you know, we can have a whole discussion about that. But if that's the case, I'm not sure I would call them mercenaries.
I don't believe that they're defensive. And then every time one of them gets captured or killed, they talk about a private contractor being captured or killed as if it's, you know, someone working to rebuild the infrastructure.
Right.
When these people are carrying guns and acting like the military, in my mind.
Yeah, well, I agree with you on that, that is a little bit of Orwellian doublespeak. Stuart, thank you for the call and for keeping me on my toes. Dan in Locust Grove, Virginia. Hey, Dan.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
I'm great. What's up?
Well, I love your program, and I agree in general with just about everything you talk about, but you were talking before about how, as progressives, we consider people's basic nature to be good, and the conservative mindset doesn't agree with that. Basically, all of this makes me feel kind of pessimistic, but I feel like we're talking about a lot of evil people in this world. Do we really consider the basic nature of the ruling class and the war profiteers and Halliburton and the Bushes and the Cheneys to be good?
Yes.
Or
yeah, I do. I'll tell you, I do. I really do. I think that there are a few sociopaths among them, and I think, frankly, probably among the highest levels of power and wealth in this country, you have a higher percentage of sociopaths than among the normal population, for a couple of reasons. But what I would suggest to you, Dan, is that we have a society, a social system. We've organized the rules of the game of society in such a way that people act out and are rewarded for behavior that in other societies is discouraged. In Aboriginal or Indigenous societies, by and large, people who accumulate a lot of stuff are considered to be mentally ill.
Right.
In our society, they're considered to be rock stars, and you know, isn't that great? And I think that comes out of societal values, not out of, you know, DNA. And in fact, if you look at the vast majority of the human race, the history of the human race, you look at people who have been living the way humans have been living for 100,000 years or more, you know, by and large, they are egalitarian. They share. And if you look at all other primate species, and for that matter, pretty much all other animal species, they're cooperative rather than competitive internally. And so I think that our essential nature is cooperative. That's where I agree with Thomas Jefferson and disagree with Alexander Hamilton or John Adams. And agree with Washington, Madison, and Jefferson, rather.
Oh, I see what you're saying. That's great. Thanks. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome, and thanks for the philosophy discussion. I love it. David in Bainbridge, Washington Island. Hey, David.
Hi. Yesterday you had a man on, some fellow who was born in India, who argued this very, very vehemently about the cause of 9/11. He said it was due to the liberal left culture in this country was the cause of 9/11.
Yeah, Dinesh D'Souza is his name.
After we determined that bin Laden was responsible for 9/11, in an interview he was asked why he attacked the United States. One word. He said, Palestine. Then Saddam Hussein, before he was hanged, one of the last words he uttered was, long live Iraq, long live the people, and long live Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
That is the root cause of everything that's going on over there.
If not the root cause, it is the root excuse. It is the convenient, useful. Everybody likes to say it. Yeah, David, I'm not disagreeing with you. Although I would submit to you that in all probability, I don't think it's as easy as, you know, Palestine and Israel. In all probability, if we had not been as interventionist in the Middle East as we have been, if we hadn't been propping up a corrupt Saudi dictatorship, if we hadn't been you know, hanging out there in the Middle East, if we hadn't invaded Kuwait, if we hadn't stationed soldiers in Saudi Arabia as well, then I just don't think 9/11 would have happened. Art in Seattle. Hey, Art.
Yeah, hello, Tom. Listen, I have a suggestion. Since there's no such thing as a psychic, and there's no such thing as a prediction for the future, but here's a suggestion that by the end of the year, Dick Cheney will resign, claiming that he has a serious health problem, and Bush will appoint as the interim vice president Rudy Giuliani.
Could be. I would predict that he's going
to
appoint John McCain.
I'm not done yet.
Okay.
And in the year 2008, Giuliani will select as his running mate for the presidency Nebraska Senator Chuck Hagel. And the Democrats will choose as their running mates Jim Webb, and as his vice president, Bill Richardson. And that I also suggest that the winner will be the next president of the United States, Jim Webb.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting scenario, Art. I'm not ready to go along with it, but you know, that's politics is sports. I just don't know right now. Jim Webb, for example, I want to know a lot more about his positions on the issues before, and frankly, I don't think he's been, you know, in electoral politics long enough to have the experience necessary. But I mean, you know, he's been in the Senate for 2 weeks. Interesting idea. Thanks for the call, Joe in Corona, Kansas. Hey, Joe.
Yeah, Tom. Yeah. I googled. I dropped the word volunteer in Google's Civilian Reserve Corps and found that it was Wesley Clark that suggested it during the Democratic campaign for 04.
For what purpose?
I'm not sure, sir. I mean, but it does come up with Wesley Clark's name all over it.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. That's interesting. I mean, I have to learn more about this. And you wonder, I mean, say there's a lot of good ideas, good progressive ideas. You get them in the hands of somebody like George W. Bush, and suddenly it becomes something quite different.
Obviously, he's going to pervert it. I just am reading here on the Internet. He was suggesting it to react to crises both at home and abroad, which is pretty loose.
Yeah, it is. It is, particularly the at-home part. That's do you want a military force here at home that's not subject to the rules of other military forces? Sean in Madison, Wisconsin. Is it a quick one, Sean?
Oh, actually, people just stole both my comments. It was Leslie Clark. It's from Leslie Clark. Clark04.com is where he got that one.
Yeah.
And well, the House bill is H.R. 2724.
2724. That's Charlie Rangel's? Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Great. Thanks a lot, Sean. I appreciate it. That's interesting. So Bush is stealing Democratic ideas. What does he intend to do with them? I would put nothing past this guy at this point. I really and truly would. He's willing to lie about lie us into a war that has led to the death of arguably a half million human beings. I put nothing past him. 45 minutes past the hour.
Now, Daddy didn't like trouble, but if it came along, everyone that knew him knew which side to keep him on. He never was a hero for this county's shining light, but you could always find him standing up for what he thought was right. He'd say, you've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything. You've got to be your own man, not a puppet on a string.
And welcome back to the place where our talking points come from, Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee, by the way, has now just approved a non-binding measure opposing George Bush's Iraq plan, stating that escalation is not in the national interest of the United States. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service on the line from Washington, D.C. with us. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
I am looking forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Me too.
First of all, tell me if you can tell me what this is all about. George W. Bush with his volunteer civilian corps.
Second task we can take on together is to design and establish a volunteer civilian reserve corps.
What's this all about? I understand Wesley Clark rolled this thing out in 04, but was never all that specific about it. And the way that Bush is talking about it, it almost sounds like we're going to have a paramilitary right here in the United States.
Well, you've had me thinking about this all morning. I spoke with you earlier, and I haven't been able to discover anything more about it, except that the more I read it, the more that it looks like some kind of mercenary army that would be on call for overseas missions.
So the French Foreign Legion lives again, only in the United States. Actually, the French Foreign Legion still exists, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it does. It does still exist, but yeah, it would live again. And perhaps I don't know if we'd have such good uniforms. They have very good uniforms.
Yes, the French know how to dress. You know, it's they know
how to do
it, right? And generally, they know how to eat as well. What is the old funny thing about in hell the police are German? Well, never mind. I don't remember the whole joke. Anyhow, what's happening in Washington D.C.?
Everybody is reacting to the speech. It doesn't matter who you speak to. Everybody is trying to work out what it means, if indeed it means anything at all. Everyone's waiting for the polls to come out to show whether the president gets a bump that is meaningful beyond the fact that he might get a bump simply because people saw him on television, so they might say yes to answer one of the questions that they're asked in the poll.
Mm-hmm.
By and large, the response is that the speech didn't really say anything terrific, even though he did say a couple of new things, certainly when it came to energy. What he did say was new, and what he did say with healthcare was new. There isn't really a sense that this is anything that's necessarily going to go anywhere with this Congress.
Well, they were new, but there wasn't much there. I mean, you know, it's what we're talking with energy. He's gonna fill up the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Dick Cheney breaks into a broad smile when he starts talking about this. I mean, this is going to $40 billion of your money and mine is going to go into the pockets of the oil companies, which is going to help oil prices very nicely. Thank you very much. And he's going to play with the tax code to try and get more people paying money to the health insurance companies, which is helping the health insurance industry.
Well, and also this idea that if you have your health insurance through your company, you will start to pay taxes on that health insurance, which wasn't spelled out in last night's speech, of course, but is something that will happen, and this will adversely affect people who mostly work in union jobs.
Yeah. Now, he also, it sounded to me like he was calling for a bracero program. Here's Bush on his temporary worker program.
Yet even with all these steps, we cannot fully secure the border unless we take pressure off the border. And that requires a temporary worker program.
Temporary worker program. I mean, that is one badly discredited idea from the get-go.
It is. except that it may be the only route to go, and he certainly wants something to pass. He may be willing to compromise beyond that if he can get something with this Democratic Congress. He wasn't able to get anything with the Republicans. He wants to work with the Democrats, and this is an important issue to him.
Yeah,
he
but I think the Democrats are going to discover that this is radioactive. I don't think,
right.
You know, America's not going along with this.
And it could be that the Democrats decide not to as well.
Yeah, I increasingly believe Democrats are figuring out that you know, populism is here. It's on the rise, and the Democratic Party better get with the act, because Americans, by and large, do not want to see further erosion of their wages. As it is, we're seeing our jobs shipped overseas, all the manufacturing jobs, because you can make things over there. That leaves the service jobs, and now the service jobs are under downward wage pressure from immigrants, largely illegal immigrants, coming into the United States. Institutionalizing that is not going to help the situation.
I think he's going to have a tough road to hoe with every single thing that he brought up last night. There wasn't a single issue that he raised, whether foreign or domestic, which is going to be easy for him to implement.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Jim Webb's speech, it was a brilliant, powerful, passionate, personal speech. I understand the DNC gave him a speech and he threw it away and wrote his own. Is that true, or is that just folklore?
Well, he was given the speech that was 5 minutes. He ended up with a speech that was 8 minutes. So basically, I think he took the speech and he changed it and he added to it. I think the core of the speech was there, but he changed it substantially.
Yeah. And now I've had several callers today say, hey, Jim Webb for vice president, or Jim Webb for president. The guy's been in elected office for what, 2 weeks?
Yeah, 2 weeks, if that. He's barely got his boots under the table and asked his first set of questions at his first Senate Armed Services Committee hearing.
You know, what this says to me is not how brilliant Jim Webb is, although it was a brilliant speech last night, but it says how hungry Americans are for a politician who will speak truth to power.
I think that's true, and it could well be that he will start thinking about running, but I don't think he's going to do it now.
Yeah, I think that the calls that I'm getting about, you know, hey, let's have Jim Webb run for vice president or whatever, I think what's underneath all that is not a love of Jim Webb, it's a love of a politician who's willing to stand up and speak out. And hopefully, increasingly, we're going to see that. I mean, you know, on the Republican side now, Chuck Hagel speaking out against George W. Bush, saying that back in 2000, Bush wanted to have war all over the Middle East. I mean, that's pretty amazing. That's just out in GQ. Anyhow, Victoria Jones, I'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow. Right,
great. With the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. We'll be doing the program live from the Radio Row at the Families USA Conference at the Mayflower Hotel. Also, tomorrow night, a book signing at the Mayflower Hotel. Drop by, say hi. It's free. 57 minutes past the hour. I'll be back right after the news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. In the chat room, they're suggesting that maybe Higgins should be running for president. I just have to tell you, I'm sorry, guys. If Higgins was president, it would be just one war after another. It would be just like Bush. Anyhow, you know how sometimes you know what you know, and sometimes you don't know what you know, and sometimes you don't know what you don't know, and sometimes it's even the stuff that you don't know that you really need to know, and sometimes even everything you know is
wrong. You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Could it be everything you know is wrong? Or everything you know is wrong segment, by the way, is sponsored by LiberalStore.com. All things liberal in bumper stickers, buttons, T-shirts, and more. Go check out the liberal teddy bear there now at LiberalStore.com. Marty Essen is with us. He's the author of Cool Creatures, Hot Planet, Exploring the Seven Continents. Hey, Marty, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
CoolCreaturesHotPlanet.com, by the way, your website. You suggest that our survival at a certain level may hinge on our protecting things that want to kill us.
Yeah. I'll give you an example. When my wife and I were traveling for my book, we went down to Belize, and we walked into this cave full of vampire bats. And we had
literally vampire bats.
Literally vampire bats. And some of them were only a couple inches away from the top of our heads. And, you know, these are creatures that people tend to want to eradicate. And yet, vampire bats, what scientists have discovered is that the anticoagulant in their saliva is the most effective anticoagulant known to man. And so what scientists have been able to do is they've taken it and made it into a drug called Draculin. And Draculin can help people survive heart attacks and strokes. Another example is there's a snake, a venomous snake, down in Brazil, a close relative of the Fertile Ants. And scientists have now discovered that they can take that venom and turn it into drugs for people with diabetes, high blood pressure, and kidney disease. So, you know, when people indiscriminately eradicate some of these animals, we never know what we're getting rid of that might be able to help us down the line.
Yeah, well, and beyond that, I mean, that's the human-ocentric, you know, I don't know what the word is, but anthropocentric or whatever worldview of we don't want to get rid of things because we may find them useful. But there's a larger picture here too, and that is that all of these different species interrelate with other parts of the web of life.
Exactly.
And if we disturb any part of that web of life in a really serious way, we disturb what is actually keeping us alive. And here we have a situation right now where as many as a third, perhaps even half of all species on Earth are threatened. What do we do?
Well, we've got to keep fighting for them.
Yeah.
You know, and we need to preserve these ecosystems that are being destroyed.
Marty, you traveled all around the world to write your book, Cool Creatures, Hot Planet, Exploring the Seven Continents, and it's written like a great travelogue. It's a fascinating read. To what extent do you think that ecotourism, let me rephrase that, how can we do ecotourism in a way that helps and supports wild places like this rather than trashing them? I mean, there's a fine line between a whole bunch of people tramping through an area and you know, turning it into a bad version of Disneyland, and on the other hand, people being able to actually have some personal experience of a wild area. You know, they've done that very well in Antarctica, for example. You point that out in your book. You know, everything goes in, comes back out again, that kind of stuff. But there are some parts of the world that are basically being turned into tourist traps.
Yeah, and I'm very much against that. You know, the whole concept of you leave no trace is really what we need to stick with. And you know, ecotourism, I think, is very important because it does make people appreciate things. Unless you see it sometimes, you don't appreciate it. And when you appreciate something, you're going to fight for it.
Yeah. Well, good job. Marty Essen, the author of Cool Creatures, Hot Planet, Exploring the Seven Continents. And the website is coolcreatureshotplanet.com. Marty, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Good talking with you. Keep up the great work and the fun travels. This is a fine book, and it was a great read. So much enjoyed it. Thank you. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Gene in San Francisco, California. Hey, Gene.
Hi. As a segue from your guest just now, when Bush mentioned global climate change last night, it was a big deal. People clapped. But I just saw an article that he stopped funding to the, I think it's called the National Oceanic and Climate Administration,
yes,
so that they don't have enough money for taking measurements on the weather and
climate. Oh, yeah. There is a whole long list of those things. And you know, I thought about actually on the program just sitting down with a list of here's what Bush said and here's where he lied and going through it. And concluded that, A, it's all over the web, and anybody who is all at all inclined to know this kind of stuff can find it. B, it's working its way through the newspapers and will be on TV and whatnot. And C, it would just be a deadly boring list because people get it. I wanted to deal with the big picture instead, but you're absolutely right.
You know that tape you keep playing over and over again
about
the Army?
Yeah.
Well, at the end, what does he say? Does he say defining struggle?
Yeah, here it is.
And that requires a temporary worker program.
Whoop, I'm sorry, that's the wrong one. Here it is right here. We'll go to the end of it.
We give people across America who do not wear the uniform a chance to serve in the defining struggle of our time.
Okay, so what is the defining struggle? It says to me that perhaps he wants a holy army of militant American religious fundamentalists.
Holy cow, yeah.
And it's like code for his dominionist backers.
Right. Was he speaking in code to Tim LaHaye and all the folks who've read? Oh, man. Yeah.
And then there's one more, Tom. Last night he misspoke. He said chaos is the greatest ally. And then he corrected himself and said chaos is their greatest ally.
Right.
And
right.
Those things are the most revealing to me in these speeches.
Yeah, because, I agree.
Has been such an advantage to their seizure of the oil resources of Iraq.
Well, and the neocons have this thing they call the greater chaos theory, which is if you throw the cards up in the air and they, you know, and just completely reorganize everything in the Middle East, then maybe it'll reorganize in a positive way. And what's really odd is that Bush and his guys in the White House subscribe to the greater chaos theory, that if you just, you know, if you bust it up bad enough, you can reorganize it in a way that doesn't have the vestiges of the old system that they find distasteful or whatever, and you can get control of it. Mm-hmm. And yet they dispute the greater, they say, well, you can't have evolution because you have to, you know, things are so complex, you have to have an intelligent creator. So complexity has to come about as a result of careful planning and intelligence. So we can't teach evolution in our schools, or chaos, you know, anything like that. That anything might come out of chaos over a period of time, over a long period of time. And yet in the Middle East, they're saying, oh, but let's create chaos. I mean, it's absolutely crazed. Anyhow, Gene, thank you very much for the call. Good to hear from you. Tom in Minneapolis, Minnesota, KTNF. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hey. The big picture is basically in a soundbite, destroy FDR's New Deal. It's all about that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. This is my, you know, my favorite Rush Limbaugh quote.
Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well.
Right. Now, I wanted to go quickly into Webb's rebuttal, but quickly, two books that you reviewed on BuzzFlash, and very good, I've read them both, and for your listeners, Thomas Paine and The Promise of America for a Founding Father.
By Harvey Kay.
And the second one, The Second Bill of Rights, FDR's Unfinished Revolution. If everybody reads that, they'll get it.
Yeah, and I wanted to thank you, by the way, for turning me on to that book, The Second Bill of Rights.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how many liberals don't even know about that speech, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then on the psychology of con thinking, just go to former Republican John Dean's Conservatives Without Conscience. He documents all the scientific studies on what you talk about philosophically.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But on Webb's rebuttal, he invoked two liberal Republicans, Teddy Roosevelt and Ike. And it's good and it's bad. And why it's good is because it shows how far right and fascistic the current Republicans have become. He was trying to show that.
Right.
And secondly, it's risky, though, because McCain also invokes Teddy and Ike so that the Repubs will stay with the GOP in 08.
Yeah,
so
the problem, though, is that nobody's buying it with McCain because he's also sucking up to Falwell and the religious Reich, which everybody knows both Eisenhower and Teddy Roosevelt would have turned their backs on.
But he's trying to keep those Reagan Democrats who like the populism that Webb was hitting at. People love that.
Yep.
So what real Democrats have got to do is go even further left and invoke the greatest president of the 20th century, Franklin Roosevelt, not Teddy,
right.
Talk about the New Deal, and also invoke the founding father, Thomas Paine. Because those two, I don't know why Democrats don't invoke those two great men.
Yeah. Because Paine's book, The Rights of Man, I mean, that laid out the liberal agenda. And, of course, FDR, I mean, just...
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
There you go. FDR. 16 minutes past. Yeah, thank you, Tom, for the call. 16 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no! Not a chance! Right back.
Well, it's a strange old game to learn slow. One step forward and it's back to go. You're standing on the throttle, standing on the brake. In the groove till you make a mistake. Sometimes you're the windshield. Sometimes you're the bug.
Ah, yeah, sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug. Well, sometimes, you know, and sometimes you're Bush giving a whacked out speech. Oh, my. We have with us Larry Scott. He is the editor and publisher over at VAWatchdog.org.
Hello again, Tom.
Hello, Larry. There were a couple of things that were conspicuous by their absence in Bush's speech last night.
Yeah.
One that I thought was reprehensible was no mention of New Orleans. Yeah. Another was no mention of veterans. I mean, he didn't, or maybe there was something there that I missed, but I didn't hear anything about making sure that veterans get the benefits that they're entitled to, making sure that the VA system is solid, making sure that veterans have access to health care, expanding health care as a consequence of all these vets who are coming back from Iraq, with a whole variety, from really, really serious injuries to the possibility of depleted uranium poisoning and post-traumatic stress disorder. Not to say that those aren't serious, but you know what I mean, from amputees to that. Nothing.
Not a word, Tom. This is it's either the fourth or fifth year in a row. I'd have to go back and check my records that the president has not mentioned veterans in the State of the Union speech.
But he is so quick to line them up behind him for a photo op or active duty personnel.
Exactly. And he uses veterans and he uses active duty personnel constantly for that. But he's also very good at, and here's something I've said many times, he's very, very good at praising dead veterans. You will see him at Memorial Day and on Veterans Day. He will go to Arlington, to the Tomb of the Unknowns, and lay the wreath and show proper respect there. But I've often said it is easier to praise a dead veteran than it is to pay for the care of a living veteran. And what we find is that's exactly what's going on right now. And there was no mention in there last night for a very specific reason. We're talking about money. We're talking about billions and billions of dollars. We're talking about overhauling the VA system, providing more funding from the top to the bottom. As veterans right now, because of the influx of veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan, are causing huge long waiting lists. Remember, as troops are come off of deployment, these active duty troops, and especially the National Guard and Reserve, they have 2 years, even though they may still be in the Guard and Reserve, they have 2 years unlimited access to the VA system. They also get priority, as it should be. These are the people that need the care most. So what's happening there is just pushing the older veterans to the back of the line, and there's terrible funding issues. He didn't mention it for a specific reason. It's not funded. He knows it's not funded, and they're not going to do anything about it.
Because they don't want to raise taxes on millionaires and billionaires.
Well, let me tell you what, it's going to take a tax raise. We also have a problem with the Democratic side, and that is what I'm hearing, and this comes from members of the House and the Senate, when I've talked to them about how will we handle funding in the future. We need larger hospital staffs. We need more programs. And we're talking into the tens of billions of dollars. And I'm getting a stall. I'm getting things like, we're really going to have to look at that. We're going to have to make it work inside of budget constraints. Or even one member of the House just told me, where the hell are we going to get the money?
Yeah.
And here's the problem. You know what word they're not going to use. They're not going to use the T word.
Well, and Democrats have to get comfortable with that, frankly, in my opinion.
I have to say,
if you know, taxes are the cost of membership in a civil society. And if you want to have a civil society, you have to pay for it. Otherwise, you're a freeloader.
And we need to bring
back the concept of this whole flat earth society bunch, you know, the Club for Growth guys and the Grover Norquists as freeloaders, as leeches. And label them as such and make it very clear that when these guys go on and on and on about tax cuts in an era where we're piling up huge debts and deficits that our children and grandchildren are going to have to pay, they are not just freeloaders, they are pernicious freeloaders.
And I do have to realistically and honestly give the new Democratic Congress time to find their way, you know, to their various committees.
And they need to hear from us. I mean, if they don't hear from us, they're not going to do it.
And that's another point. They have to hear. Folks, don't be afraid to say the T word. I think anyone who's a realist, Tom, like you and I are, we know that there is a price we're going to have to pay for the services that our society needs, whether that's veterans or any other of the services. And it's not going to happen unless we raise taxes. And I think we have to be very realistic about that. And we also have to say, I support this. I don't mind paying more taxes. Please do your job and do it correctly, and let's move forward.
I just want some value for them. You mentioned older veterans being pushed to the back of the line. We just have a half a minute left here. Sinatobac Tirbalmani?
Well, I can't hardly pronounce it either. We just call it Acinetobacter. It is a bacteria that is coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan. It is a deadly bacteria that literally eats the body alive. We're finding more and more cases of it. The real problem now is it's starting to sneak its way into the VA hospitals. Some healthcare professionals think this could be a threat to older veterans whose immune systems are compromised. The VA and DOD have a big push to control this particular bacteria.
Wow. It's not yet, vancomycin resistant,
no.
Is it?
No.
It's just a bug we're not used to.
It's a bug we're not used to, and it's coming back. We have to control.
Yeah, and it's coming back in big ways. Larry Scott, VAWatchdog.org. Thanks, Larry.
All right, John. Good talking to you.
We'll be back with your calls and more news of the day right after this break. 27 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman. Always a fine plan. Welcome back. Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. Tom Hartman here with you. It looks like John Kerry, I'm hearing this from several quarters, has recused himself from running for president. We'll see how that shakes out, but life in the big city. Alex in Scottsdale, Arizona. Hey, Alex, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. This thing about he in his speech, which I don't understand clarity about what he's talking about, bringing private soldiers into the forum.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he just pay our own soldiers and give them, bonuses and pay them like they would any mercenary?
Well, that's what concerns me, is our own private soldiers are beholden to the Uniform Code of Military Justice. There are severe penalties for doing things like helping overthrow governments like our government. The Posse Comitatus Act prevents them from acting against people inside the United States. Which is all, I mean, there's a whole lot of things. Bush is all about getting around the law. He's about getting around the law with the FISA Act. He was about getting around around the law, or even blowing up institutions. I mean, outing Valerie Plame, outing a CIA operative, and not just her. He brought down Brewster Jennings, the entire operation that was doing counterintelligence work on weapons of mass destruction, specifically about Iran. He brought that thing down, and it just for political purposes. And now you got Scooter Libby, taking the fall apparently for a piece of it. And I'm real concerned. I don't want Bush to have a private army.
Yeah, it's like they're going to go hire mercenaries and mercs and just take them over there and let them loose. And like these people can make a tactical decision or know who's bad. And then with the Malawi and the guy with the Shias, they're getting false information. One of my clients, her son got killed because the Shias knew who the medics were on the helicopter. They're getting ready to take off to go over to Tikrit from Baghdad.
Sure. And what happens when, if those private armies are not just used in Iraq, what happens if they're used in, say, Phoenix?
Or who says that they use them instead of taking us into Iran, they take mercenaries into Iran.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to me, maybe Wesley Clark's original idea was a good one. And if it's something like a service corps or something like that, I'm all in favor of it. In fact, I'm an advocate of a mandatory one-year national service program that where people can either be in the military or they can volunteer to plant trees or work in hospitals. And,
well, the only problem I have is my one client, I watched the kid grow up for 19 years, and he joined the Coast Guard, and Bush transferred him to Baghdad the day before Labor Day weekend.
Oh, geez.
And him and his 10 buddies got blown up, and all Bush could say was thank you for the Coast Guard contribution. And Anthony Gillespie is now gone, and it was my client's only son, her only son. So where is the care for the, if you only have one child over there or in the Coast Guard, and he transfers him over, and it breaks the rules. So there's no way to carry on the family name for Mrs. Gillespie. And that's just a downright outrage.
Yeah, George W. Bush opened the gates of hell, and he did it, in my opinion, for political purposes and to help out his buddies. And
when that $10 billion disappeared in Iraq,
yeah,
if you follow the money, the flatbeds went straight to Putin so he could buy locust oil from the Russian mob.
That's interesting. I think it's $8 billion that's missing, but that's an amount of money. I mean, in actual $100 bills, in bricks of $100 bills, this is an amount of money large enough to be seen from outer space that is missing. Alex, thanks for the call and interesting point. Sarge in Columbia, South Carolina. Hey, Sarge.
Mississippi.
Yes, sir.
South Mississippi.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm the Katrina expert.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I want to let you know that the people here on the, when you mention New Orleans,
yeah,
It
should have been the Gulf Coast.
Do not forget us.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to tell you what, it's bad in both areas.
Yeah, you're right. The entire Gulf Coast got wiped out. Although we're discovering now that there was a conversation in the White House about let's not federalize Mississippi because they've got a Republican governor, Republican member, and senator.
Let's screw with
the folks down in New Orleans and Louisiana because it'll make the Democrats look bad. They were
making political decisions. Here's the problem that you're not picking up on, and it's not being reported except by me. I'm the only one at unreportednews.net that's reporting this.
Okay.
But the money is, like rebuild Jackson County, which is supposed to take care of the hurricane damage. They
hired
a person that has no experience whatsoever to head this, and the money is not getting to the people.
Sure.
They turned down qualified people and gave this crony this job, and the money is going into the pockets of these corporate thugs and the people who, like Jim Yancey of Jackson County Community Services Coalition, is not getting the grant money because it's going to people that's pocketing this money.
Yeah, Sarge, I am absolutely and utterly convinced that when Congress begins seriously investigating these kind of things, they're going to discover crimes that are going to make Teapot Dome look like it was just an absolute accident, and that people are going to go to jail, and that this echoes all the way up, all the way up, all the way up to Bush and his vice president and his cabinet. No doubt in my mind, from all the evidence we've seen. Sarge, thanks for the call. Richard in San Jose, California. Hey, Richard.
Hi. I'm going to jump back into the Katrina thing that you just had on, and also this volunteer civilian reserve program.
Mm-hmm.
Katrina showed that FEMA and the civil disaster parts of the National Guard have been totally emasculated by Bush. I was at Katrina. The capability is not there. And the Red Cross...
Is it that the capability isn't there, or is it that they chose not to use the capability? Because, they did a great job with Hurricane Charley just before the 2004 election in Florida. That came through, killed a few people.
That's Florida, and Florida has a very effective Office of Emergency Services.
No, but, I mean, the feds were there. The feds were there with water and with food, and FEMA was there. FEMA did a very, very good job with several hurricanes in Florida. And all of a sudden in Louisiana, they can't do anything.
But part of that was a decision to punish Louisiana because they're Democrats.
Yeah.
Part of it was that the assets of FEMA and the National Guard
are in Iraq now?
Are in Iraq. The National Guard assets are in Iraq. I'm on a state policy committee to try and rehabilitate what we have, and we've got a statute in our state where we have a non-federalizable guard, which is not the National Guard, it's the State Guard. It's mostly guys like me who are too old and diabetic and arthritic to be in the National Guard, and a lot of the...
So you're creating it like a state militia to help out, to actually be there for the state.
A state militia for natural disasters and major fires and earthquakes and hurricanes and floods and searching for...
Now, is this something... You're in California, right?
Right.
Is this something that's being done by the state, or is this something that a group of citizens are getting together and doing?
This is done by the state, and it's also been a grassroots thing by the Red Cross and the Salvation Army, the ham radio community, and the Coast Guard Auxiliary, and the Civil Air Patrol.
That's interesting.
Also by most of our urban fire departments have a fire department reserve. That fire reserve are people who are called up by a beeper for a major fire,
right,
and they call me. San Francisco has fire reserve.
No, I'm familiar with that. And being an old ham radio operator, I'm familiar with how some of these networks have come together, although I haven't been on the air in a decade and a half. But that's interesting. Richard, I got to move along. 73s, thanks for the call.
Okay.
Chuck in New York City. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Well, straight away, I want to get to the point about the VA watchdog where he was talking about these taxes, which is crazy. If he looks at the David K. Johnson's perfectly legal book, he can find a way to bring up the money without having to tax us at all. But I'm a Alex of Tocqueville fan of yours with Dinesh and the Skull and Bones and the Opus Dei, Neocon, Carlisle, Junta.
By the way, if I may interrupt you, Chuck, I thought it was interesting that the three Opus Dei members of the Supreme Court, Scalia, Alito, and Thomas, unless I missed something, didn't show up last night for the State of the Union address.
Yeah, that was fascinating.
Only the three Opus Dei members.
So, anyhow.
Anyhow, it's just, you know, it's just the odd things that you notice. You know, it's just like noticing that whenever Dick Cheney drank a glass of water, George Bush stopped talking and drank a glass of water.
Yeah, well, the Supremes do look fabulous when they come together.
Yeah, don't they? Don't they? So anyhow, the point you wanted to make, Chuck.
Well, your take on Webster Tarpley at Tarpley.net, and he's done the background, the full biography on Bush and his father and so on. He's got the perspective that the only way to make any changes here is to really call for a general strike. Otherwise, there's not going to be an impeachment.
There won't be a general strike. I'm not familiar with Tarpley, but there won't be a general strike. And the reason why is because 26 years of war against the middle class by starting with the Reagan administration and leading up to now, 26 years of economic war on the middle class have made the middle class in America so indebted. People are so enslaved, I mean literally enslaved, by their debt. They don't own their homes. They don't own their cars. They're terrified that if they lose their job, they will lose their health care. They'll get wiped out. This 26-year war against the middle class, specifically for the purpose of doing away with the middle class that'll stand up and speak out, like Alexis de Tocqueville. You mentioned Alexis de Tocqueville back in 1836. He published Democracy in America. It's still in print. It's an amazing book, an amazing look at America. In fact, it was the bestseller, the best-selling book, one of the three best-selling books in the entire 19th century. Millions of copies sold, translated in languages all over the planet. That middle class that Alexis de Tocqueville was looking at, and that was the remnants of the early American middle class, mostly an agricultural middle class, and the powerful middle class of the 1960s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, and early 80s, the conservatives didn't want to handle it. They couldn't deal with it. That middle class was willing to stand up and speak out and talk back, and they're like, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to take away their power. We're going to take away their pensions. We're going to take away their health care. We're going to make them terrified. We're going to maintain a certain level of worker insecurity, to quote Alan Greenspan, so that they will not. And I don't believe that people will go into the streets because of that, because they're enslaved now. And we have to take back the country a different way. 45 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to the place where we run rings around the right wing 3 hours a day, five days a week, right here on the Tom Hartman program. Just some quick headlines. This, just, you know, what's happening. The New York Times summary, actually. The Israeli president, who has been charged with rape, is being urged to resign. He asked for leave. There are new ethics charges against the Duke prosecutor, that Duke rape case. John Kerry has bowed out of the 2008 race for the presidency. He said, that's it. Ain't going to do it, which is probably a good idea. And I salute you, Mr. Kerry, for taking that position now and letting the field consolidate well. And a non-binding resolution dismissing President Bush's plans to increase troops' strength in Iraq as not in the national interest passed the Senate panel, you know, one of the committee that it was running through, 12 to 9. It's not bad. Not bad. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number. Tom in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hey, WPTT 1360, I'm listening to you.
There you go.
I have three questions. One is the civilian corps that they want to hire. Is that going to be used to, well, they know it's an unwinnable cycle of violence over in Iraq. Is that going to be used to protect the oil fields over there, or is that domestic?
I don't have any idea. Bush, in his quote, he talked about it being international, and he talked about it in a way that kind of suggests that he's talking about throwing these kids into combat. Here's the clip again. Hang on just a second. Let me turn this thing up.
Second task we can take on together is to design and establish a volunteer civilian reserve corps. Such a corps would function much like our military reserve. Would ease the burden on the armed forces by allowing us to hire civilians with critical skills to serve on missions abroad when America needs them. We'd give people across America who do not wear the uniform a chance to serve in the defining struggle of our time.
I believe that he believes that the defining struggle of our time is the battle between Judeo-Christian, Judaism and Christianity on the one hand and Islam on the other. I disagree with that, but I think that that's his worldview. And
yep.
And so, you know, onward Christian soldiers.
Yep. Tom, has any money or tax dollars been used to, you know, rebuild oil fields in Iraq or roads or anything like that been used for the oil fields, you know, our tax dollars?
I don't specifically know, but I'd be astounded if they weren't.
Mm. And the other thing is, when I was listening to the State of the Union last night, I was kind of disturbed when he said that Al-Qaeda's in Iraq, so that's an excuse for us to be there.
Yeah.
Of course,
yeah.
We know that they weren't there before.
No, Saddam Hussein would not tolerate Al-Qaeda coming into Iraq. They were his enemies. He and Osama bin Laden were bitter enemies. They hated each other. And, in fact, one of the reasons that Osama bin Laden got thrown out of Saudi Arabia and lost his passport and was literally deported from the country was because he tried to raise an army to invade Iraq on Saudi Arabia's southeastern border, as I recall, and because Saddam Hussein was a secularist who was allowing women to go to college and practice things like being doctors and whatnot and allowing girls to go to school. How dare he? Thanks a lot for the call. Abraham in Dallas, Texas.
Hello, yes, Tom. When they used the term struggle before and the defining struggle of our time, some people were translating struggle as jihad.
Yeah, jihad literally means struggle, does it not?
So would this not be the great jihad we are in?
Oh, geez.
And a private
army? You're right. And let's get people who are extra-military, who are outside the purview of the military, who are not subject to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, who are not subject to military discipline, who haven't sworn an oath to protect and defend the United States and the Constitution. Holy cow. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Man, you're welcome. Thank you. It gets more and more bizarre. Gwyneth in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Gwyneth.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I heard Bush talking last night about entitlements again, and I just want to remind people that Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid are not entitlements. They are insurance programs for people who qualify based on disability or age.
And yes.
To call it entitlements, I would say that Bush himself is far more living on entitlements than anybody that I know, because Bush just was born into a family that had plenty of money.
Yeah.
And he's living
probably,
on them.
Probably a better definition. Good point. Thank you, Gwyneth. A well-made. Alan in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Alan. Hey.
You're stacking up us Eugenians, aren't you?
Yeah. I have two more on hold as well. I don't think we'll see. What?
Well, I wanted to bring up the unintentional humor in Mr. Bush's speech last night when he said, medical matters should be between a family and their physician. Coming from the Republicans, that's about as big a joke as you could possibly want.
Yeah, they want the government in there between the family and the physician, saying you're going to do what with this zygote?
And
good point. Scott in Greenfield, Massachusetts, or Terry Schiavo? What? Scott in Greenfield. We just have 30 seconds. Hey, Scott.
Oh, hey Tom. Thank you for all you do. I just wanted to say, as far as like people not being able to get out there and be active, because they're so busy working. I'm wondering if you are interested in considering encouraging voluntary simplicity in people's lives.
I am. And, in fact, I've written two books that basically conclude that's something that's, an important thing, not just as an economic value, but as a personal spiritual value, as a moral value.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the search for the middle class utopia is just about over.
Well, the middle class in the 50s was a lot more simple and less McMansioned than the middle class of today. And we'll see how it all shakes out. 56 minutes past the hour. Tomorrow, I'll be broadcasting live from Washington, D.C., Radio Row there. And tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at the Mayflower Hotel, drop by if you'd like to pick up a copy of Screwed and have me sign it and hear me rant about it and say hi. So, but tomorrow and Friday, I will be broadcasting live. Also, Saturday, big rallies and United for Peace and Justice in Washington, D.C., and also in San Francisco. Remember, activism begins with you. Tag, you're it.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.